From 90.7 WFAE, this is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Pundits and economists will be quick to tell you how dismal our savings rate is in America. Here are a few of the facts they might use to hammer home the point. Americans are saving less, even as they take on more debt and declare bankruptcy more often. The decline in personal savings poses a potential risk to the economy. In 1982, the national savings rate stood at 11.2%, but then began a steady decline to the point where in June of 2005, the rate of personal savings sunk below zero. The U.S. savings rate is the lowest it has been in 73 years, the lowest since the Great Depression. Average Americans are struggling to get by. They are running up enormous credit card debt even as prices rise and salaries appear stagnant. For many, health care costs pose an impossible burden. Add to that rising life expectancies, meaning more people living longer in retirement, and the economic picture becomes, well, bleak. Yet it is the average American who has kept the nation's economy relatively healthy until recently. They have been encouraged to go shopping to help keep the economy afloat. The government's about to issue checks to help stave off a recession in the hopes that people will use those checks to buy things. Is it any wonder that so few of us put anything away for a rainy day? Well, maybe it's time to start. But how? If you have a growing family and an income growing much more slowly than food or gasoline prices, how can you find even so much as a nickel for saving? There are people in business and government who know that this runaway spending with no personal savings is simply unsustainable, and they are trying to get the word out about how to turn things around. And that's what this hour is about, saving, and how to find the money to do it. We're joined by three experts. Catherine Black is a senior vice president and the savings director for Wachovia. She's responsible for all of the bank's savings products, from personal savings accounts to CDs and money market accounts and more. Catherine, get a little closer to that microphone, but welcome to the program.
Thanks so much.
You can move it around if you'd like. If you'd like to sit back, that's fine. Matt Martin is an economist with the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, based in Charlotte, focusing on trends in the Carolinas, and is also involved in the bank's economic education and financial literacy efforts, and is a board member with the North Carolina Council on Economic Education. Thank you for joining us as well.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And both Catherine Black and Matt Martin obviously join us in our Spirit Square studio. Joining us by phone from Raleigh is Jill Cox, Government Relations and Communications Director of United Way of North Carolina, which serves as a coordinating partner for North Carolina Saves. Jill, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having us.
North Carolina Saves, by the way, is part of an effort called America Saves, which is a national campaign bringing together a coalition of nonprofit, corporate, and government groups to help individuals and families save and build wealth. Are those two different things, savings and being and building wealth, or are they one and the same?
Well, we think that saving is really critical at United Way, and through our partnership with NC Saves, we've really focused on that. But building wealth also has another facet to it, Mike. It also is involved in reducing your debt, so you have a better chance to achieve success and stability for you and your family long term.
I mentioned that the savings rate in this country, at least in 2005, had fallen to below zero. I want to find out what that exactly means, but how does it compare to the savings rates of average people in other Western countries? Are they saving at the same rate, a slightly better, a lot better than us, Matt?
Savings rates in other countries do tend to be higher in the U.S., but it's not all bad news. I mean, the fact that savings rates are pretty low in the U.S. is something to be concerned about, but part of that is what the household situation is for a lot of people around the country. It's important to remember, for example, that through the third quarter of last year, at least, household wealth was setting new records every quarter. Later this week, we'll get the fourth quarter number. Chances are it's leveled off, and with housing prices falling, household wealth may pull down this year.
Household wealth is made up of what? How much money you have in the bank, plus the value of your home and other tangible assets?
Think of it as a balance sheet. So it's net worth of all households. If you take them collectively, so most of that's going to be in the form of their homes, their equity in their homes, and mostly retirement type accounts.
So with the stock market declining and home values declining, wealth is evaporating before our very eyes, correct?
That's right.
We'll talk about what that means and what that means to people who are saving, because if it's going to just disappear, why bother? Just spend it now and live well. But if other countries in, say, Europe are saving more than we are, How is that possible? We keep being told that their taxes are much higher than our taxes. Gasoline over there costs a fortune, and yet they're able to put money away. What are they doing differently than we are doing? How are they able to do it?
Well, one of the things that I'd say is this country is a country that likes to overspend, very commercial. So we found, especially through our work, Wachovia's work with the Consumer Federation of America, we co-sponsored a study to understand why people don't save. And there's a lot of pressure to spend in our country. So not just the everyday kind of the gas, groceries kind of thing, but really impulse spending is a big issue in our country, and particularly for young people.
Where is that pressure coming from?
A lot of it comes from media.
But they have ads on television and magazines and billboards, etc., in Germany and Italy and England and Spain. Why don't they succumb?
Well, you know, I can give you a personal story. My brother just went over to Germany for a business trip, and he came back and said, "Wow, I'm seeing colleagues of mine who are extremely happy. Their house is probably a third of the size of my house." That just their level of spending to him seemed very different, and how they spent their money seemed very different. Mm-hmm. So where my brother might have two or three HDTV televisions in his house, he saw something very different when he was over in Europe just a couple weeks ago. So it was an interesting discussion on different spending habits and priorities.
Let's talk about what savings rates means. So when we talk about the personal savings rate, are we talking about people who put money in a passbook savings account, people who fund their IRAs or participate in the 401k at work, or people who have a stockbroker or have an E-Trade account or something like that and are investing? What are we talking about?
It's all of that together. It's the calculation to come up with a national savings rate takes whatever isn't spent as a percentage of disposable income, and it's a collective number. So there are some measurement problems with it. For example, dividends or capital gains don't count as part of income, but they subtract off the taxes on those as part of expenditure. So it's not a perfect measure by any means.
My head's going to explode.
What did
you just say?
The basic point to take away from that is there are serious measurement problems. It's an aggregate number. It's sort of a back of the envelope sort of calculation.
Well, you make an interesting. You just mentioned capital gains, and anybody who has invested in something that's made money and they sold a stock that they sold more for what they paid has to pay a capital gains tax on it. If they want us to save, and investments are part of saving, why do they tax it?
That's a good question. On the fiscal policy side, it's a double taxation. You earned the income, you bought the stock, then capital gain, you're paying some more. I really can't answer that question very well.
The president believes, and I don't want to leave you out in the cold here, Jill, and this question actually may affect people who deal with the United Way a great deal more than people who have some personal wealth, but the president believes that a recession might be staved off by checks being issued sometime this spring, maybe May, in the amount of around $300, and he hopes that people will spend that money in an effort to stimulate the economy. What would you suggest people do with the $300 they're about to get? And not everybody's going to get the money, but some people will.
Well, I think that people need to first look at what their debts are. Is there an opportunity for them to decrease their debt with some of that money? Is there an opportunity for them to begin a savings account with some of that money if they don't already have one? We're really encouraging people from our perspective to make sure that they first split their tax return if they get that, because there's an opportunity for you to do that with a simple IRS form. And you know, if you never put it in your pocket, it's so much easier to save it because you never have it in your hand to be able to spend it.
Jill, why do you hate America?
I ask you that's
a joke question, because
we want America to be stronger, and we think people need to have resources to make that work, and resources may be money in the bank instead of a new HDTV.
The reason I ask the question is because the president and other people in the administration want you to spend that money. Saving it and paying off debt is not going to help the economy, because debt has already been spent. You're just putting your, you're digging yourself out of a hole.
Well, but the way to consider this, though, is if in the absence of those checks, would some households have to cut back on their spending? So if they're able to pay off debt and that prevents them from curtailing spending later this year, then it is having a stimulative effect compared to what the world would look like without those checks. So it might do the job anyhow.
Okay. So what you're saying, I'm just joking, Jill. So what you're saying is if you need to pay off debt, if you have credit card debt and that money is coming to you, the first thing you ought to do is apply it toward that debt.
Quite possibly, and that would prevent you from having to make some other sacrifices in your household budget. This is particularly important, I think, for households that are sort of almost tapped out. They're the ones I think this is targeting, and for them, it's either shore up your household finances by paying off some debt or else make some really tough decisions about where to cut spending.
We have been doing a lot of programs, and there have been lots of stories in the media about people who have bought more house than they can afford, who have agreed to more loan at an interest rate that they can afford, and whether they've been misled or didn't understand it is immaterial. The fact remains they've agreed to it, and the banking and the mortgage industry is suffering because of it, and we're all suffering because it's causing home values across the country to decline. We are witnessing people who are willing to go into bankruptcy with seemingly no shame attached to it, something that 30 years ago people would have been they would have been beside themselves at the idea of having to declare bankruptcy. We have people who are financing their lives with credit cards at crippling interest rates, 25%, running up enormous debts that they will never be able to pay off. Is part of the problem, and this is not, we're not even talking about savings here, we're talking about spending, mm-hmm. Is part of the problem here simply a lack of financial education about how to deal with money and build a financial future that includes wealth?
I would definitely say that financial education is one of the key priorities that we've had at Wachovia for that exact reason, which is a lot of children, we believe, are kind of growing up. They're watching spending. They see how credit cards just look like, you know, play money, and it's an endless bucket. And what we're really trying to do, even from youth, you know, up to right now, we've just launched a co-sponsored How to Save $1 Million seminar with the Consumer Federation of America to really make sure that we are helping people understand how to make both savings and spending plans. Spending plans being very important. If one of the things that we're looking at and using are tools to help people understand and keep track of their daily spending. So, you know, one of the big issues, as you just mentioned, Mike, is just the fact that we have a big responsibility, we believe, to really help people in financial literacy understand how to manage their money.
Last week was North Carolina Saves Week, and I know that the United Way and Jill Cox, you were involved in that, and what you were trying to help people understand is what, how to start saving and how to begin the road to financial health, correct?
Exactly. We really want people to see that savings is a possibility, because when you look at, for instance, low-income individuals across our state, about 1 in 6 don't have access to any kind of banking products. And we want to help them understand that through banking partners like Wachovia and others across the state, we have access to low-entry rate savings products.
Okay. Hold that thought. We'll come back to it in just a second. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Charlotte Talks made possible in part today by Collaborative Arts, presenting the Charlotte Shakespeare Festival with public performances of the romantic comedy Much Ado About Nothing, July 30th through August 10th at Spirit Square, charlotteshakespeare.com. And by Dr. James Altizer and the Vein Center of Charlotte, providing state-of-the-art outpatient treatment for varicose and spider veins. Trust the vein specialist, 704-341-1122. Coming up on Monday on Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins, oil, energy, and how it affects the U.S. and the world. That's our topic. Michael Clare will join us for an encore presentation of Charlotte Talks. Among other things, he's the author of Rising Powers, Shrinking Planet, The New Geopolitics of Energy. We'll discuss his thoughts on geopolitics and the future of oil. That's Monday morning at 9 here on 90.7 FM WFAE. A reminder that this is an encore edition of Charlotte Talks today, so we won't be taking your phone calls this hour.
The Friday News Roundup. Congress and the White House agree on housing relief measures. a military commission in Guantanamo hears the case against Osama bin Laden's driver, and the McCain campaign tries to get back in the spotlight during rival Barack Obama's high-profile trip abroad. The Diane Rehm Show, Friday.
The news roundup from 10 to noon on WFAE.
They say you learn something new every day.
The dirty little secret in advertising is that most people that work for advertising agencies don't watch commercials either. It shows that they don't believe in their product.
I'm Michelle Norris. Learn lots of new things on All Things Considered from NPR News. Join us every weekday.
With regional news, weather, and traffic weekday afternoons from 4 till 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about saving, how to start saving, and what it means to your life once you do. Eventually, we'll get to that. With Karen Black, who's the Senior Vice President and the Savings Director for Wachovia. Matt Martin, who's an economist with the Federal Reserve Bank in Richmond, stationed here, or stationed is not the right word, but serving Charlotte and the Charlotte area. He's also a board member of the North Carolina Council on Economic Education. And joining us by phone, Jill Cox, Government Relations and Communications Director for the United Way of North Carolina. They're involved in something called North Carolina Saves. And we were talking just before the break about last week being North Carolina Saves Week and how part of the thrust of that, Jill, was to introduce people to the how to save and also to the products that are available to them to help them save. You made mention of the fact that many people don't have access to banking services. There are banks on every corner. How can that be?
Well, first of all, they don't have opening balance that they need to open a savings account for many of them. And for others, if they do have the opening balance, there's lots of fees sometimes involved in some of the accounts that they could actually open, or they don't have a credit score that would allow them to access a financial product. So we're trying to provide education and awareness of how to have a better credit score, how to become a bank account holder, and how to begin the process of truly saving and stabilizing your future.
Let me turn to one of the banks. Why is it? It's true. Why is it that it's been difficult for some people to save? Why do you need to have a good credit score to open a savings account? Why have savings accounts traditionally been plagued by fees that will sometimes wipe out whatever gains you make through the paltry interest given on passbook savings accounts? Why is that? Why has it been so difficult?
Well, there's a number of reasons why banks charge fees if someone doesn't have a minimum balance requirement. For example, one of the things that Wachovia just did to hopefully overcome some of those barriers for a lot of consumers who are just trying to get started is just launched a new product called Way to Save. Has no fee on it at all. No minimum balance requirement. The idea is how can we help people kickstart their savings? There's this fear for most consumers that they have to have a whole lot of money to put in a savings account to get started saving.
Don't they?
And they don't.
What's the minimum?
The minimum for not getting a fee for most banks is somewhere between, say, $200 and $300 on just a traditional savings account to not have a monthly maintenance fee. Many banks waive that for the first several months anyway for a new customer. So, you know, they certainly need to talk with their banks about that. Also, if customers, and this is what we really want to get the point across, if consumers will start an automatic savings program from their checking to their savings, many times that also will help them avoid a fee if we know they're going to actively be funding that account. And it's really the idea of having automatic savings. So out of sight, out of mind. So when you put your paycheck in that checking account, decide how much a month you can transfer, whether it's $10, $50, $100 a month.
I know that the money that we as depositors put in the bank, be it checking or savings, is a liability for the bank and not an asset. I understand that. But you're taking that money and you are lending it out to other people and making money on the money that we put in the bank. Why do we have to turn around and pay you anything? We're giving you money to use.
For most banks, when they look at just the overall profitability of an account, a lot of times that's why you'll see relationship pricing in a bank, depending on how many accounts you have, whether or not some accounts may have service fees waived. But there is a cost to serve a customer. And so
why? I'm not questioning.
Just, oh no, that's fine.
What is it? What's the cost?
The cost is, the brick and mortar branches that banks build, mm-hmm. or the call centers, the service centers that they have to fund, okay. to make sure that they can service customer questions, calls, statements. There's a long list of expenses that go into managing accounts.
Jill, are there banks out there that will take a dollar?
There are, and we've worked through NC Saves with a number of financial institutions across the state, like Wachovia, and we have a whole list of others on our website that are offering folks an opportunity to come in, have a small opening deposit, low fees or waived fees for the first period of time, just like Catherine was talking about. So we really encourage folks to go look at our website, see where the local branch is that's closest to you, and be able to go in and ask them about an NC Saves account, because they have a special account set up just for this purpose.
It is said that if you save a dollar a day from the time you're 25 until the time you are 65, and you put it somehow in a Roth IRA, and not everybody can take advantage of a Roth IRA because some people make too much money, and that IRA earns 8% a year, you will retire with an extra $94,555 in your account, which actually sounds low to me. But there are those who believe that they cannot afford to put away a dollar a day. Jill, from your experience at United Way, that is true, correct?
It is true. We've seen families that are really struggling because they simply have a low income. They aren't receiving a living wage in some cases. They may have two people in a household working full-time making minimum wage, but that doesn't necessarily even give them enough money to cover housing. So they are struggling. That's why we are working actively to try and put in place wealth coaches, motivational presentations through the NC Saves program, financial counselors through United Way programs, so we can sit down and figure out how can we take the money that you have and make it work for you, so that in the end you can put away a few dollars a month, whatever that may be, to start building that nest egg so that you have an emergency account. If something happens, then you need to tap into something.
And there's a phrase that people have not heard enough, having your money work for you. Wealthy people understand that concept, and people who come from lower economic backgrounds don't ever hear that phrase bandied about the dinner table. If you didn't buy that cup of coffee at lunch or that candy bar to pick me up that cost a buck or 95 cents, and you took that 95 cents and put it in a savings account over time, you would be funding this Roth IRA to the tune of a dollar a day very quickly with the $95,000 at retirement. People don't understand the concept of compounding interest. Is that their fault, or is it a lack of financial education in the schools?
Well, I think that it's a little bit of a lack of financial education in the schools and a little bit of mom and dad providing maybe some at home as well. We're working with the school systems now. There's some new legislation in place that requires them to provide financial education for high school students. It's a fairly minimum requirement, but we're excited to have a place to start the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
They have to do that as part of a civics class in high school. They have to have a week of financial education, which is really very minimum. If you're going to go out into the real world, you need to know how to balance a checkbook. You need to know how to keep track of your debit card receipts. You need to know how to do some very basic things. And we hope that this is going to begin to give that foundation and also give us a place to grow from as we look to the legislature to ask for more of that in the school system.
The Federal Reserve Bank is like the nation's bank. It lends money to banks on a short-term basis, as I understand it. My understanding of
That's
the
right.
Fed is incredibly narrow and shallow. But
that'll have to be another show.
It's exactly right. And you have been helping, your organization, the Fed, Federal Reserve, has been helping banks through this economically troubled time, by cutting interest rates almost on a weekly basis. Ben Bernanke has been doing that, it seems to me. That helps banks and big money people. It does not help small people, does it? It kind of hurts us, doesn't it?
Well, that's not true. There's the rate that the Open Market Committee targets is a very short-term rate, and other short-term rates follow that very closely.
But credit card rates haven't come down as a result of
For some, they have.
Have they?
For others, they haven't.
Meaning what? The people who are paying their why would it affect some and not others?
Well, that's the individual bank's call, okay, looking at their portfolio of, okay, of credit card customers. But auto loan rates tend to follow changes in the federal funds target because they're more tied to short term. What has happened to some extent is mortgage rates have come down a little bit, but not as much because that's tied to a longer term interest rate that isn't targeted by the Federal Reserves.
When the Fed cuts the rate, are they cutting the prime? Is that what they're doing?
The prime moves lockstep typically with the target federal funds rate.
And the prime rate affects savers, passbook savings account holders, because if the prime goes down, banks generally cut the interest rate they're paying savers and CDs over time, correct?
That's correct. So we take a look at the Fed funds rate, which last year, probably 6 months ago, was maybe 5.25.
As of July, it was.
5.25. And we're down to 3% right now and expect another 50 basis point drop. So.
And what are you paying on passbook savings accounts?
Actually, I'd have to go back and look. What I'd like to tell you is what we're paying in our way to save account right now, which is 5%.
Wow.
Yes. And the reason why.
How can you afford to do that?
The reason why we decided to stick with that rate, we were actually developing the program over the last year and a half. Mm-hmm. We had made a commitment after doing some research and finding out how important that initial interest rate was at getting people to make a decision to begin saving. 5% obviously resonated very well, and we decided we wanted to continue to make that investment in this particular program called Way to Save, which is a traditional savings account, as a way to get people excited about starting to save. So what we're doing is we're paying 5% on the first year, and then to encourage people to keep that money in that account, even though the whole idea is creating emergency savings. So if they need it, that's fine. They have full access. But 5% on another bonus on what they've kind of kept in that account, mm-hmm, over the end of the year. And then we're paying 2% and a 2% bonus on the next 2 years as a way to get people to kickstart their savings.
Other banks have something like Way to Save. I know Bank of, mm-hmm, America has a program. Other banks have one as well. Explain how your account works.
Way to Save was based off of some research that said people really were excited about how fast a dollar adds up over time. Mm-hmm. Back to that example we talked about earlier, the dollar a day. So there are a few ways that people can begin to see real savings accumulate in their Way to Save account. One is every time they use their check card, again, thinking about when you're spending, making sure that you're paying yourself first. So every time a consumer who has Way to Save uses their check card, a dollar will get transferred from their checking to their savings. It's their dollar, but it's a way to begin to build that savings.
So if you pay $6.95 for something on your check card, you're debited $7, but the extra dollar goes into your savings account.
Exactly.
I think Bank of America has a thing where they sweep the change into your savings account. So if you pay $5.95 for something, a nickel is swept into your thing and you're charged $6.
Exactly. Okay. And what differentiates us from other programs is not only do we use that as a way to the check card as it's an everyday transaction, it seemed to be an easy trigger for savings. The other is electronic.
Also an easy trigger for spending, don't you think?
Well, and we have not seen big change in behavior thus far, and we've only been out about 2 months, but we also, because again, this is the consumer is the dollar's coming out of their checking account. The other way to add the dollar is every time they pay a bill online, have electronic transfer. And then finally, what we're encouraging people to do is to set up an auto transfer of up to $100 a month from their checking into their savings account. And again, we're paying 5% on these balances.
Why do you want that? I've had my bank say, you have too much money in this savings account. Wouldn't you like me to put this in a CD for you? I've had them say that to me. And I'm thinking, well, that's very nice of you, but why would you do that when you have to pay me more on a CD? Why would you want to encourage people to put money in an account for which you will have to pay them more?
Well, number one, I believe it allows us an opportunity to build trust with a consumer that we're actually trying to offer value-added services. And over time, we hope that relationship grows as people are able to grow their savings. We'll have other options for them that right now they can't fathom having in 3 years $2,000, $5,000 of savings to actually put in a CD or, open an IRA. So this allows us to have in beginning of a relationship that we can build over time.
Some people, Jill, are afraid of these debit cards or check cards that you use in place of cash. They're not credit cards. They debit your account as soon as you use them, and the money is gone. But it seems to me that they're actually much better than using cash as far as I'm concerned. And correct me if I'm wrong here, because it seems to me that this way you can really track where your money is going. And that, is that not the first step to understanding how to save?
Well, I think the first step to understanding how to save is something that Catherine touched on earlier, and that's really creating, making sure you have both a savings and a spending plan, because you need both of those to be able to see what kind of money that you have available, what you're spending it on, so you can tell if you're really spending it, are you spending it on necessities, or are you spending it on a latte that you could use that money differently if you chose to make a decision about that money. So we really think people need those two pieces in place to be able to begin a true and good and successful savings plan over time. As far as a debit card goes, I think that that's a consumer education thing. I think a lot of folks who keep cash on hand do it because they know what they have. They can see it, they can feel it, they can touch it, and they just haven't had experience with banking products in lots of cases. They may have second language issues and just not truly understand the value of having an actual account to put your money into at a bank.
Matt Martin's with the Federal Reserve, and I mentioned in the beginning of the program that this zero savings rate and the increasing debt that most Americans are carrying ultimately is a real drag on the economy. It could really have some deleterious effects on the economy. If we were all to get on the savings bandwagon and start socking it away, whether it's a dollar a day or $5 a month, whatever it may be, what impact over time would that have on the economy from the Federal Reserve's point of view?
Well, the basic economics is if everybody started saving more today, they'd probably mean they'd be consuming less today. So we'd actually probably see in the near term a little bit slower growth. Mm-hmm. But over time, then, as that savings gets socked away, you start to have people saving more for retirement. The real concern is down the line, we've got the baby boomers starting to retire, and from that generation forward, there are concerns about the solvency of Social Security mm-hmm. and general just preparedness for retirement. And I should put out that these are complex decisions. Household financial decisions taken in the whole are extremely complex. So, you know, it's even the people who are well-educated and involved in a lot of different financial markets don't get this right all the time.
And it isn't just our being bombarded by commercials encouraging us to buy 50-inch flat panel screens like they were tricycles. It is the government telling us that we need to spend to keep the economy afloat. Isn't that true? I mean, if the economy slows down because we decide to save our money instead of spending our money, aren't we going to see businesses go out of business? Aren't we going to see the stock market tank? Aren't we going to see a recession, a major recession, even a worldwide depression, if Americans don't spend?
Well, I mean, the timing of this discussion has an influence here. If we were talking about this 2 years ago, then, you know, the economy's growing at 3-4% annually. That discussion's very different than right now, where the economy's going through this soft patch. So, that, you know, the timing of this matters.
Yeah, it was going well because we were spending like there was no tomorrow, and it's on credit cards.
And it's mortgages, but not. And I want to point out, not all mortgage debt's bad debt. Growth in home ownership has been in part a good thing over time.
We'll continue this discussion in a moment. We have to take a break. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Charlotte Talks made possible in part today by 123NC.com. Instant access to North Carolina criminal records and nationwide background checks. Criminal records can be searched instantly online at 123NC.com. And by McCall Center for Visual Arts exhibition, Launched, an open studio July 26th with artist-in-residence Hong Sok Lee and ancient Korean metalworking Kyum Boo from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Details at McCallCenter.org. Coming up next at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, a panel of journalists will join guest host Susan Susan Page for review and analysis of the week's top national news stories. Among them, Congress and the White House agree on housing relief measures, a military commission in Guantanamo hears the case against Osama bin Laden's driver, and the McCain campaign tries to get back in the spotlight during rival Barack Obama's high-profile trip abroad. The guests in the first hour, David Korn, Washington bureau chief of Mother Jones Magazine, Tony Blankley, the syndicated columnist, and Gene Cummings, reporter for The Political. Then in the second hour, the international hour, a new panel will talk about Barack Obama continuing his trip abroad with a speech in Berlin, the Bush administration talking about a time horizon for troops in Iraq, and Serbian authorities capturing a former Bosnian Serb leader accused of genocide. Panelists Jonathan Landy from McClatchy Newspapers, Michael Hirsch, the senior editor at Newsweek, and Dimitri Savastopoulo, Pentagon and intelligence correspondent for the Financial Times, will join Susan Page in the second hour at the Diane Rehm Show from 10 to noon here on 90.7 FM WFAE.
I'm Renee Montaigne, host of Morning Edition from NPR News. Before you crawl into bed tonight, rest assured that while you're sleeping, we will be watching the world. From Baghdad to your backyard and all points in between. Tune in and get prepared for the day ahead with the up-to-the-minute news, background analysis, commentary, and the latest on arts and sports. Wake up to the world with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekday mornings from 5 till 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
The Canadian government spent a lot of ugly decades trying to force its native people to assimilate. Now it's settling with the victims.
I don't believe you could put a price on it at all. Like, no amount of money is going to ever help me with what I've gone through.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Can you put a price on peace of mind? That's next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 FM WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're in the studio at Spirit Square with Catherine Black, Senior Vice President and the Savings Director of Wachovia. Matt Martin, an economist with the Federal Reserve of Richmond, stationed or located here in Charlotte, and a board member of the North Carolina Council on Economic Education. And Jill Cox joins us by phone from Raleigh. She's Government Relations and Communications Director for United Way of North Carolina, and they're involved in something called North Carolina Saves, which is part of an overall nationwide effort called America Saves. Let's go take a phone call, shall we? I think this is Philip in Charlotte, who has a question that's been echoed in several emails so far. Philip, go ahead.
Yes, good morning to all.
Good morning.
I'd like to give two quick examples as to how we can begin to save. One is with this thing called Homeowner Association, and the other is with this thing called health insurance. And I'll give you two quick examples. I was overseas last year, and when I came back, these people wrote me a letter threatening to sell my house because I was not in time to pay them this money. And till this day, I still have yet for somebody to actually explain to me why do we give these people our money, Homeowner Association. They don't cut our grass.
Philip, that's off the topic, and it's not what you told us you wanted to talk about, so I'm letting you go. He said he wanted to talk about the cost of living being so high that it's hard to save, and that is something we do want to get into in this program because the price of everything seems to be going up. Salaries are not going up at the same rate, and it is difficult to put money away. But Gene in Gastonia sent us an email saying, why are passbook interest rates so low? And Linda in Charlotte wrote us to say, one of the most frustrating parts of savings is trying to make money on it. We are in our early 50s, so we are not willing to take too many risks. It doesn't seem to matter which bank you go to. You have to watch all the CD rates. You are barely making any money. It doesn't matter if you have $5,000 or $50,000. Where can you really make some money? But you have to put it at risk, don't you, to really make some money.
Well, you know, I'll tell you right now, given the slowdown in the economy and what's going on in the markets, we're seeing actually a flight to quality where more people are actually pulling their money out of the market right now and putting it in what they consider safe havens like a money market savings account or a CD. So, and what we find is in these down cycles, regardless of the rate, how low the rate gets, people still are putting their money there because they feel like it's safe. They're not going to lose their principal.
Because the principal is safe.
Exactly. And to answer the question on maximizing earnings, one of the things, you know, for yourself and your savings, one of the things that we're seeing is the rate at which the Fed has lowered interest rates has been so quick and frequent over the last 6 months that we're not sure that consumers' minds are kind of caught up to how fast rates have gone down. This impacts the banks immediately. So where, for example, a consumer who might have a CD that was at 5% mid-year last year, their CDs coming up for maturity because most CDs last year were offered in the kind of 6 month range mm-hmm. where some of the best rates were. Mm-hmm. And now they're looking at rates between 3 and 4 and thinking, what happened and why are banks offering such low rates? And that truly is not a bank decision as much as, you know, banks are being forced to drop their rates because, you know, that's the cost of funds to them.
Right. David in Charlotte writes, what is the home ownership rate of countries that do have strong personal savings rates? Our system makes it essential for us to own a home. My mortgage is my savings. I have no choice. It's 50% of my after-tax income. I have lived in other countries where people save a lot, but they do not own homes, or they live in homes that have been passed down over generations. Our tax system requires Americans to have a mortgage or otherwise give an inordinate amount of money to the government.
That's a good point. And I think homeownership rates are probably a bit lower in other developed countries around the world, in part because we do have this strong tax incentive. And we seem to have decided as a society that homeownership is a good thing. It's, I guess it maybe it melds with our kind of history of independence and that sort of thing.
But he brings up an interesting point that his money is all in his house, and that's something we talked about during the break, Catherine, that mm-hmm. there's a difference between wealth and savings. You can be very wealthy and have all your money tied up in assets that are not liquid. And so when an emergency strikes, you've got no cash.
Exactly. We see that the issue or the crisis around having emergency savings goes across the spectrum from low to moderate income to high income. There are some folks in kind of the high income category that have, you know, very large debts, but they're also putting a lot away, but it's not easily accessible. So they're maxing out what they can put into their retirement at work and what they put in non-liquid savings. But then the problem is when a minor emergency happens, they have to pay for that with a credit card or, mm-hmm. or debt because they don't have the emergency cash there.
Should that be the first thing you save for? Is that the first thing you should do is set up a rainy day fund for the day when the furnace breaks or the water heater has to be replaced or something happens that you didn't count on happening?
Absolutely. So what we encourage people to do is just make it very automatic, out of sight, out of mind. Have an automatic transfer come from your checking to your emergency fund savings every month. It builds up over time, and it's just there when you need it.
But there are lots of poor people out there, Jill. People, according to information supplied to us by Wachovia, 34% of Americans with incomes under $25,000 say that they cannot afford to save. And I suppose that's true if you've got 3 or 4 kids or, you know, so what do you tell those people? How do they start a rainy day fund, Jill?
Well, President Bush's stimulus package is a great way to start that fund. We think that they should go ahead and put some of that money aside in savings. We think that they should look at things like, are they eligible for an earned income tax credit? For their family, a lot of folks, particularly in the Charlotte area, about 34% of Charlotte households eligible for EITC actually claimed it, which means that $9.5 million was left on the table by people who didn't even know they qualified. Mm. And that's money they could bring home and just go ahead and set aside, like Catherine says, out of sight, out of mind. Just put that money aside and let that be the beginning of your rainy day.
But if you're a waitress who's also going to school and you're making minimum wage plus tips, and you've got to pay the rent and the phone bill, and you got to have a car, and you got to buy gasoline that's going up toward $4 a gallon, and every single penny that you are making, and maybe more, is going right out of your hands. The minute you get it, you have to give it to somebody else. Where is the money going to come from to put a penny away for future savings?
Well, like I said, that's why starting with some of these easy things, like what you might get back from your tax refund, is a good way to begin the process. But for those folks, it is incredibly difficult to find those monies to save. They need access to those low entry rate savings products that we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. Where they can just put in the dollar to start, and the fees are waived for the first year. And they can begin to see that, okay, that dollar is safe, and that dollar is going to grow.
But after the first year, will the fees then eat up whatever you have accumulated if you leave it in that institution?
It varies by location, but most of the banks are very interested, like Catherine said, in working with individuals to try and cultivate, instead of a consumption mindset, a savings mindset, and really move them to a different place.
Did you want to jump in?
Yeah, one thing that households could do is commit now to save in the future. And there are programs like Save More Tomorrow that do this. And it's based on the idea that people are willing to enter a program if sort of the sacrifice comes later on down the line. So right now it might be really difficult to find money to save, but if you structure your budget to sort of deal with high gas prices and the like now, and then commit, say, to start saving at your next pay increase. And then over time,
in other words, when you get the pay increase, money goes to savings,
or some part of it at least. Okay. And then every time you get a pay increase, you're putting more money into the savings, and because it's never actually showing up, it's again you're getting past this human inertia and the tendency to not save simply because you haven't in the past.
We are an instant gratification culture, and so it's hard for us to understand that if you put $300 a year into a savings account, that someday that's going to amount to a lot of money if you don't touch it and you keep adding to it because of compounding interest. It will actually accumulate, and it does so exponentially, doesn't it?
Absolutely. What we have found through our research is people are so shocked by how the power of compounding interest and how their money over time grows. And so they look at that little amount that they put in now and see what it looks like 15, 20 years from now. It sounds like a long time, but as you're thinking about retirement and other key milestones in your life, it's amazing how fast that adds up.
Your research has also shown you that one of the barriers to savings is a legitimate belief that people believe that they can't save. How do you get beyond that barrier?
I think through some of the tips that we've talked about on this program that Jill's mentioned, that Matt's mentioned, a lot of the overcoming the barriers is that inertia, comment that Matt made earlier. One is, figure out what you think you can comfortably change in your spending habits a day. It's amazing if you look at things that people spend on every day, no matter sort of who you are, there's things like a coffee, the lunches, et cetera, that you could scale back on, brew your own coffee at home, bring your lunch, and figure out how much of that would you be willing to save and put aside. And that gets back to the saving spending plan. So you really do need to think through how to cut back some of your spending that seems like you can't go without, and you can create savings.
Plus, Jill, I would think you can also start cutting spending is a good way to start saving, it seems to me. And you do that by what? Clipping coupons, not buying name brands, not traveling 5 miles to save 3 cents on a box of cereal. Give me some other tips.
Look for public transportation so you can cut back on your gas fees. Frequently you can buy a bus pass for an entire month for $40, which is about the price of a tank of gas now or less. So that's an easy way to look at that. Bring your lunch to work instead of going out and picking up a cheeseburger at McDonald's. Making a sandwich at home is quite inexpensive, especially if you buy off-brand bread to start with and all of those good things that go into it.
It seems like this takes a lot of work. And a lot of planning.
It does, but I would say there are grand rewards for folks who do this. And back to some tips I'd add onto what Jill was saying. Be aware of your cell phone cost. Take a look at the what you're paying on insurance. Look for low-cost family entertainment, so rent the movie versus going to the movies.
Go to the library and rent the
movie. Go to the library.
They have movies at the library.
Yeah,
free.
And AmericaSaves.org has a ton of tips. So someone could go on, you know, just to get some of those ideas. If someone says, give me some ideas of things I can do.
AmericaSaves.org. Let's go take a phone call from Christian. Christian in Charlotte, welcome to the program. You're on WFAE.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I just would like, you know, I've done all those things that you were just speaking of. You know, I'd bring my own coffee and I bring my own lunches. I do buy the off-brand stuff. You know, I only make about $30,000 a year, and I support three people on that. What I'd like to know is why exactly banks don't provide more online tools. Speaking of rainy days, you know, I mean, you know, we have things like, you know, car, you know, repairs that need to be done, you know, just different, you know, expenditures that I have to make. Why I can't take my, like, my total amount in my checking account and actually have that separated into, you know, let's say I want to put, you know, $100 a month towards my car insurance, so I can see exactly how much I've saved for each one of those items.
Is that something a bank needs to do, or can't he just do it on a piece of paper at home?
You can certainly do it on a piece of paper, but if there's some, if you need some help in separating your accounts, you can certainly, you know, separate. You have several free checking accounts, however you want to structure your finances so that it makes sense to you, and then have a primary account to which anything that's coming in, that's the holding, the mother tank, and then you can have
that's basically what I'm talking about, something like that.
Would it help you not in other words, you're saying if you had separate accounts, you would not touch that money?
That's right.
When it's pooled, you know that it's just in a pool and you're liable to grab it.
That's right. Like say if it was linked to a mother account, you know, and so I can actually have a little bit of money saved over here for this, and, you know, for my son, for my car.
Well, she's saying,
it builds up for each one, and so I know exactly where I'm at and where I need to put more
money.
We
have a minute left here, Christian, and Catherine says you can do that.
Absolutely. I mean, you can set up as many accounts as you need to manage your finances. The thing I would caution you is, you know, just kind of making sure you know which accounts you're setting up and which ones could potentially cause you fees, because you don't want to suddenly pay fees on a number of accounts. But you can get some basic free checking accounts that shouldn't be an issue.
Christian, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. Again, according to Wachovia, 10% of young Americans believe they are likely to accumulate $1 million during their lifetime. 75% of those with high income include people who make $75,000. Or more believe they can. 2% with incomes believe between $35,000 and $50,000 believe they can accumulate $1 million in their lifetimes. If you do you have anything? What will $1 million get you these days?
A nice retirement.
Really? If you retire at 65 with $1 million.
If you were making $30,000 a year, I'd imagine you'd have a nice retirement lifestyle by comparison.
Give me the website again, Jill, one more time.
www.NorthCarolinaSaves.org.
And the website you mentioned, Catherine?
It's www.AmericaSaves.org.
You can get tips there. You can get tips at NorthCarolinaSaves.org, and also you can be enrolled in that program that Jill talked about a few minutes ago if you do it right now. Jill Cox with the United Way of North Carolina, Matt Martin, an economist with the Federal Reserve, and Catherine Black, Senior VP and Savings Director of Wachovia. Thank you all for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our senior producer is Wendy Herkey. The associate producer is Tim Ross. Aaron Sutton is our research assistant, and our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, go to WFAE.org.
And our programming is funded in part today by Audi of Charlotte, offering the 2008 Q7 SUV, available in 6 or 8 cylinder, Bang & Olufsen audio, panoramic sunroof, and optional 4-zone climate control. World-class world cars at audiofcharlotte.com. And by Bank of Granite, now offering Granite mobile banking for cell phone access to online accounts. Bank of Granite, now a state-of-the-art service, as solid as our name, on the web at bankofgranite.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, host of NPR's On Point. There's a lot at stake in our country's choices this year, and there's a lot of noise, but there's an important, honest conversation going on that cuts to the heart of what really matters. It's right here, every day, and it's about you and your country and our world. Come hear what it's all about. Join us for the next On Point, weeknights at 8 on 90.7 WFAE.
I'm Mike Collins. No one has to tell you that the price of gasoline is at record highs. Will the price go higher? And if so, by how much? The price of oil affects the price of just about everything, and world demand for oil is increasing. What will this mean for the United States, for you? Michael Clare, author of Rising Power, Shrinking Planet and Blood and Oil, joins us to share some insight in an encore presentation of Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
Partly sunny today in the Charlotte region, an afternoon high around 90, mid-60s for tonight's low, and sunny again for tomorrow with highs in the lower 90s. 78 now, 90.7 FM WFAE in Charlotte, 90.3 FM WFHE Hickory.